Yeah, I think we've got some good topics laid out. I'm very happy to have Jim Sanders, the supervisor of Superior National Forest, here today. And my intention would be to spend as much of our allotted time on that conversation as is appropriate. If we run out of stuff to talk about, fine. We'll pick up the other agenda items, but I want to take maximum advantage of Jim's time here today. So that's where we're going to start. We've got two additional items on the agenda that are revenue related, and we'll pick those up if we can. I'm going to ask to go around the room and get introductions for everybody, just for the benefit of our two federal friends here, so that they know who's staring at them in the room. And Jim, why don't you go ahead and introduce your colleague?
Okay. Well, again, I'm Jim Sanders, Force Supervisor in the Superior. Our office out of Duluth, and with me is Mark Hummel. He's the Deputy Force Supervisor. He's been with us since August. He came here from rainy country just like this outside of Wrangell, Alaska. So he feels at home today.
And I'm Ron Nargang, the committee chair, Senator.
Tom Saxog from Grand Rapids.
Patty Phillips. I was a 218er. Do you know what a 218er is? Iron Ranger for 54 years.
Actually, you're a 218er.
218er. Yeah. 54 years. And now for 5 years, I've been a 651er. North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale. I'm school superintendent.
Okay, let's go with Paul.
I'm Paul Pujar with Lands and Minerals, Department of Natural Resources here in St. Paul.
Kathy Lewis, Assistant Director, Lands and Minerals, DNR, St. Paul.
Dave Schuler, Lands Program Coordinator for the Division of Forestry.
Good. Gavin out with Cook Hill Girard Associates.
I'm Marianne Heck with Minnesota Senate Environment Natural Resources Committee.
Kirk Adelko with Minnesota House Environment Policy and Game Fish and Forestry Committee.
Dan Rourke with Lands and Minerals DNR.
Pick it up in the back there.
Dan Mueller, Fiscal Analyst for the Senate Environment Committee.
Okay.
Kevin McHenry, K-12 Senate Committee.
Great.
Ed Warner, Senate Minority Research.
And Gloria Gunville, Senate Majority Research.
Carlin Fontaine, Senate Counsel.
Craig Knopf, Analyst with the Environment and Natural Resources Committee.
Shelby McQuay, an Analyst with the Education Committee.
And Anne Marie Younger, Senate Counsel with the Education Committee.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to start this off with Jim. He's got a long tenure here in Minnesota, so he's very well schooled on the issue of school trust lands, particularly those within the boundary waters. And as I said, we'll spend as much time on this as appropriate. I've filled him in on the backgrounding we've done as a group so that we don't have to replow all of that ground. So I think he can go through his presentation and just brush over the things that he's aware that we've already talked about. And I particularly asked him to think about whether there are any sideboards that he faces on the federal side of this that we ought to just get on the table so that we all know that they're there. And welcome, Representative Dietrich.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Jim Sanders, Supervisor of Superior National Forest.
Hi.
And his deputy, Mark Hummel.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Dietrich. So, Jim, take it away.
I'm still trying to figure out.
Don't even go there.
Somebody
ought
to help me with that later on.
It was easier when they were 218, 612, and 507.
Very close.
There was 218, okay. There was 218 and 612ers.
All right, it's been a long day. Actually, I hasn't even started. First, thanks for having us come down and we can talk about it. I know I've been on the Superior for 13 years now, first part of November, and I've worked with four DNR commissioners on this topic, and we came real close in 97, we came real close to having this whole issue within the boundary waters resolved, but we are where we are, and that's okay. But just want us to be part of that discussion to see what we can do, because even though we're a key partner in what happens in Minnesota, and that's how at least the Forest Service, how we treat and why we have our offices where we are, is how we relate with the communities and with the state and the counties and all that as well. So what I wanted to do, and you have black and white copies, just quickly give a context. And a lot of this, Ron said, you already have. So it's a brief perspective on it, because there's some things I want to make sure, and I'll go through very quickly. I didn't bring 10 copies or more than a couple copies. I just made some here. So this just and some of this you've already touched on, and so I'll go past it, but it's, I call things kind of the fun facts, the know and tell, and it's just kind of the grounding and stuff. So the first slide is just merely the acreage of the federal land and the non-federal land within our ownership, and I highlighted the county ownership that is federal. So 70% of Cook County is federally owned, 90-some percent of Cook County is publicly owned. When you take all the DNR and all that, so those percentages on the side are merely federal ownership of the county. The next page is the land ownership within the wilderness and how it breaks down. We talk about the boundary waters is 1 million acres. I mean, first, I mean, it's a gem. It rises above all of the wilderness areas for many reasons, the ecological reasons, the social reasons, and the political reasons, too. And it's got a history of 100 years of history. And the ownership pattern reflects that history. And it's the heaviest used wilderness in the wilderness system. It is one of the few fee-based or permit-based wilderness in the system. And so it's loved and by everybody that's there, from internationally to for those of us within the state. And the thing I've noticed I've worked for the Forest Service for about 37 years, looks different from the boundary waters than other wildernesses, but the Bob Marshall, who was established the same legislation in the boundary waters, is the boundary waters people have a very place ownership. I've always been at Splash Bay on the 3rd of July type of thing, or different things, where in other wilderness areas, you don't get that place-based ownership as strong as we have in Minnesota. And that is something that is took me a while to recognize and understand, but it's pretty amazing. But
and only the Mall of America has more visitor days.
That's right. Visitor days in the boundary waters of Mall of America are the top. And the Superior gets over 5 million visitor days on the Superior. More miles away to compete with national forests like the Angeles National Forest, which is right next to the city of Los Angeles. We're right up there in the top 8 in the nation of national forest for visitation. The Boundary Waters is top, second in Minnesota to the Mall of America. So it's kind of an interesting, I don't know if we're schizophrenic in Minnesota.
We just know how to keep our priorities right.
That's right.
Shop first.
Shop first and then go up to the wilderness. So anyway, so that just gives a breakdown. And there are others, the point of this too is there's school trust lands, section 1636, but then there are university trust fund lands and there's state acquired land in the wilderness as well. So when you talk about state ownership in the boundary waters, there's more to it than just a school trust. Now deviate, you may or may not have gotten there. Federal government makes payments to the states and then they end up in the counties where we are nationally. There's 156 national forests. We all make the same payment, except I'll touch on the exception that's unique to Minnesota. We make a payment, low taxes, the state makes a similar payment. We make a payment, but that goes to the counties through the state to the counties in their general fund. Then we make a payment called the Secure Rural Schools payment. It used to be called 25% of the receipts that come off of national forest land, but that is earmarked and goes to the counties for it's earmarked for schools and public roads. So public schools and public roads, that's earmarked. And then the unique payment is the Seid-Blatnik payment. You'll recognize the name. It was passed back in the 40s, and it was to offset, as the ownership was changing in the canoe country at that time, as the ownership was changing, the counties were concerned over loss of tax revenue. That's a unique payment, and I'll get to that in a minute, just so you understand. And that is unique to Minnesota, unique to the Superior National Forest, the Chippewa, or any other national forest in the nation makes the first two payments. That's made all the way around. The last one is unique to Minnesota and to the Superior Boundary Waters. The next slides are just a breakdown. The PILT is federal land within the county, and it's the population of the county and are limited by other payments. That's just a real brief of the genesis of that payment that the federal government makes. The 25% of the Secure Rural Schools is based up. It's changed a bit. It's based changed a bit, but this is it's based on the national forest land in the county, and it is earmarked for schools and public roads. It's changed in that last year Congress passed the Secure Rural Schools Act, and I didn't pull from this last night to put those specifics in it, but it's an earmarked payment. And then the Seid-Blatnik payment is a unique payment, and I want to draw your attention to it. I'll get you the dollar amounts here in a minute. It's unique to the boundary waters. It's the only one in the nation with that kind of payment. It is based on the appraised value of those 0.75% of the appraised value of the federal lands in the boundary waters. So the 800,000 acres of federal land in the boundary waters is appraised every 10 years And then that payment is made every year to those counties based on the acreage of federal land in the boundary waters. And it's applied only to the National Forest land. So that just to give you a sense, that's a unique one. Then you come to this next slide that's a graph. I'm sorry, the black and white. John, there's a spot here.
We got you up here, John. If I get you closer, you'll be easier to handle.
That's right, have a seat. Now let me walk through the payments because I've got color and you don't, so we'll take it from there. If you sum them all up, last year, and it's always a year behind in summary, last year's payment was a little over $5 million, $5.4 million. Next year's payment is going to be almost $8 million. Now I'll explain then how that breaks down. The PILT payment, or the payment in lieu of taxes, is, if you look at those bars, is the one on the left of the three bars. The next bar is the Secure Rural Schools payment, and the bar on the far right of those three bars, those clustering, is the 0.75% bar, the five lapping payment. So if everybody's with me there. First, the PILT payment, you know, it's gone up a bit. That's appropriate to Congress, to the Interior Appropriations Committee, and how big or how much money they put to those PILT payments, and then it goes from there. And the PILT payment is limited by other payments that the state gets, that the counties receive. And those other payments then are the Secure Rural Schools payment, and that's the second bar, again, if you go from left to right of those cluster of three bars. And what I would notice, have you noticed, if you look at 2008, that Secure Rural Schools payment is the highest bar. It's over I'll just say $2.4 million. If you look in 2007, the year before, that payment the second bar was down around $700,000, $800,000. That's the change in legislation that happened last year at this time, the Secure Rural Schools Act, that brought more money to these remote communities, remote counties like Cook County, Lake County, St. Louis County, as compared to Portland, Oregon, that has lots of national forests on it. They make lots of revenue. Does the city of Portland or the city of Seattle, how much money do they need as compared to Cook or Orr or Grand Marais? And so the committee or the legislation changed and skewed that to our smaller communities. That's in place for 4 years now. And that's based on some receipts and some other population factors. There's more to that that calculation. But that is the only of the three payments that's earmarked for schools and roads, public schools, public roads. The bar on the far right is the five lapping payment. For the last 10 years, it's been a little over $2 million. Next year, that will be at $6 million. That has been reappraised a year ago, and it will apply for 2009 when these payments were made. It was 1 year back. And so next year, that bar will be $6 million. So if you look at the total sum, my math was off, it's going to be almost $9 million is going to be paid to the three counties. Two of those payments are going to the general fund. Now, the other thing on Five Latinic that's important to remember, it's unique. I don't want to overemphasize or repeat myself, it's unique. And the county commissioners, last year when I met with them and I had the Undersecretary of Agriculture in the meeting and we talked about this change in the Secure Rural Schools payment, they were happy about that. They were happy about the $6 billion, the new appraised value of the boundary waters, but they also cringed because now $6 million is a number that shows up on appropriation committees, even at the federal level. And other places are going to say, oh, we'd like to have that too. And it's the only place in the United States that this happens on federal land. So I just raised that. My good friend, deceased a couple years ago, Claire Nelson, always watched that very carefully. He's very astute. He's a Lake County Commissioner. Claire was very aware that that's a unique payment. We want to be careful with that. So I just raised that as one to keep on your radar screen when you deal with the boundary waters. It's unique to the boundary waters, and you deal with school trust. And how you manage that as part of management. So that's
if I can, Jim, the other thing we ought to keep in mind in our deliberations, there's a disincentive here for county government to want to see us resolve this issue. Because if we pull those acres out, we could actually end up decreasing payments directly to local government, right?
Depends which payment you look at. If you pull the acres, if you increase the acreage in the boundary waters, you'll increase their five latinic payment, but you'll decrease their Secure Rural Schools payment if it's a land exchange. If it's a land sale, that'll be a wash. in terms of secure rural schools. The secure rural schools payment's the one you want to watch. And I apologize, I didn't bring basic formulation that goes in that new with that new law. But that's one that I can get some information for you on that. You want to watch, because as the federal acreage changes, increases or decreases, then so does that payment.
Sure.
If the federal acres increase in the boundary waters, then the five Latinic payment increases. But then remember what playing field it starts elevating to. And we get an Interior Appropriations Subcommittee. I spent a year of my life with that committee back in D.C. And those types of numbers start showing up. Those are significant numbers. When it was down around 2 million, 1 million, it's not a big deal. Now all of a sudden you start daylighting. So it's just being conscious and aware. So we can talk more about that. Your next slide. What I've noticed in the state is the debate about school trust, the debate about the boundary waters and everything else. I mean, I came here when Senator Wellstone was doing mediation. I was unpacking boxes and wanted to know my wife said, you think we're going to put the tape back on those boxes, because it was pretty hot about the boundary waters, and has been for my 13 years. But it's also fun, part of the challenge. But the energy between and the cooperation with the state and the Forest Service about the boundary waters, Commissioner Joe Alexander stated that back in 81 when the Boundary Waters Act passed. And so anything you do with the Boundary Waters School Trust, all I say is no matter what you do with those school trust lands, there's equal sides polarization on either side of it. Some pragmatic about dollars, some pragmatic that the state should stay an owner of the second heaviest used thing in the state of Minnesota. And for those reasons and others, but what has always been common is the DNR and the Forest Service have the same focus and vision on wilderness ethics and wilderness management. That has not been the debate. It's just what's the role of the state. So anyway, I put that in there because some of this could have been solved in 1978 when the legislation was going on for the boundary waters. The school trust, but there were bigger issues than the school trust. So I'd say we kind of peeled the onion back, layers of the onion back, and today we're dealing with the school trust and have been about the last 10 or 12 years. But back in 1978, it would have been a great time, but there were bigger issues. That was boundary waters boundaries and how to use it and different things like that. For our perspective, the next slide is just shows for Forest Service administratively, we have four ways to deal with land acquisition or disposal. The Land and Water Conservation Funding is funding that comes right from the Interior Appropriations Committee to acquire land. And so that's dollars, and we are in the acquisition. We do a lot of small tracts on Superior. People come to us. We have a lot of people who want us to own their property. And Mark and I will say no more than we'll say yes. But if it fits and makes sense to be part of the federal estate, then we say yes to it and we go after some of that with our partners. Otherwise, we'll let it go on. But it's always a person coming to us for that. We're not out there trying to drum up business and trying to make the Superior footprint bigger than it already is. Land exchange, we do one land exchange every year. It doesn't matter how big or how small it is. We do one land exchange. The transaction cost of doing one of those is about the same, whether it's 10 acres or 10,000 acres. So we do, our staff have the capability of doing about one of those a year. Donation, every year we get a couple donations, small tracts. People will donate the property to us. They just want it to come to the federal government. And then the very last one, Small Tracts Act, is the only authority we have on the books for buying land or selling land. Not buying land, but for selling land without congressional help. And that's it's geared mainly for out west with the mining claims and stuff where you have a trespass, an innocent trespass that's been there for 30, 40, 100 years. And they've given us the authority, Congress has given us the authority to sell 5, 10 acres. And it's an innocent trespass. If we can't resolve it any other way, you're talking about moving a house or whatever that's been there for 50 years, we've got those, we can sell the federal land to them. But that's very small. We are not a real estate agency. The Bureau of Land Management and the federal government is a real estate agency. They have a lot more real estate power. Forest Service is a land management agency with a little bit of real estate capability. So, and then this other slide, I'm almost done, is exchange or purchase. We deal with value of the federal land, and that is established through an appraisal. There's a federal appraisal process. Not a Forest Service appraisal process, it's a federal government appraisal process, be it BLM, Fish and Wildlife Service, Forest Service, Park Service, it's the same appraisal process. and it's a comparative value. And those are good for only a certain time period until the values change. Today, those appraisals would last for a year or two. 2 years ago, those appraisals were lasting only about 6 months because the values of property were just so were skyrocketing and changing so fast. Today, they might not last a long time if the values go down.
Yeah.
But I mean, so but it's a comparative value. When we do a land exchange, it's value for value, not acre for acre. It's all based on value. So acreage, you know, if you're looking at similar acres, waterfront or back off waterfront, then, you know, if you're comparing two waterfront properties, then that's you know you're getting close. Then you want to talk about acres, then but the final adjustment is always going to be on the value. When we do a land exchange, if we get the values within 25%, then the balance, the equalization can happen by cash by one party or the other. And we have dollars nationally, and we like to be the one to pay the cash rather than someone else paying us. It's just perception. And that, so the Forest Service has dollars nationally to help equalize value of those, we're the ones trying to bring more money to it. But you have to first get the acreage, and the appraisal has to get you within 25%. And then this last slide, I just did a very quick, it's a little old right now, on the top bullet, but I just compared land exchange versus Land and Water Conservation Fund is what that acronym means. That's the federal way of acquiring lands. And so I just looked at different issues and to each of those, comparing the two. If you did a land exchange or if you did a purchase where we bought the state property. So acreage, if you did a land exchange, that 89,000 acres of state land and of school trust land, a lot of that is water frontage. We, in most cases, do not exchange out of water frontage because of this ecological value and everything else. And so that 89,000, to equalize value, we think it'd be about 200,000 acres of federal land, maybe 300,000 acres of federal land. So it's no small deal. It's not 89,000 acres for 89,000 acres. We think it's probably going to take 200 to 300,000 acres to equalize value. On a land, if you go to the bullet to the right, then immediately for a purchase, those numbers are old numbers. I would say you're probably talking. We would have to bring to the table to buy all those school trust lands about $100 million to $130 million. Maybe it's even more than that. But you're talking a lot of money. When we came 12, 13 years ago, 97, 98, we came very close to having the acquisition going through. I mean, it would have been about $50, $60 million. The Appropriations Committee would have done that in a series of years. I spent a year on the committee and watched that process. Once they start an acquisition, they follow it all the way through. They would have done a piecemeal, but they would have done it once they started to go. So that's the kind of money we'd have been talking about or are talking about in terms of values. If you look at the school trust obligation, whether you do an exchange or you do a sale of the land, you're getting the state out of the wilderness. It's about similar. It depends how the state manages that land that they would acquire under a land exchange. When you're talking about $120 million that you can gain interest off each year, you know, for the school trust or however the state would manage that kind of money, there's a lot there. The real challenge for an exchange or land water conservation is just obtaining funding. Land exchange, the transaction cost of doing this land exchange is going to be expensive. The EIS to do it is going to be probably around $2 million or more to do that environmental analysis for the Boundary Waters land exchange. It's going to be an expensive and debated process. And most of my stuff like that would end up in court as well. But that transaction cost, and Commissioner Merriam and I talk about that a lot, that transaction cost is a big thing administratively for us to deal with. There's still obtaining funding on the land and water conservation side, but it's appropriation dollars, different kind of funding. The environmental analysis for an exchange, it would be an EIS that we would have to go through administratively. If we do a purchase, no NEPA is needed because Congress said, here's the money to buy this land or to sell this land. So NEPA then is, from a congressional perspective, is not part of it. There's always an issue of contested ownership, and you just have to go through that, even though it was gifted to the state at statehood, the Section 60 and 36. Some people will try to contest that ownership, and so you just need to verify that. So that's a process that's there, whether we exchange it or whether we sell the land, or buy the land, I should say. So that's just part of it. Support is mixed. We talked about it before. I mean, it's some hold it idea, is it kind of in the ideologue business, but it pro and con, depending where they sit. There's been no consensus in the state in my 13 years about school trust that I have seen. There's been a number of attempts at it. Ron was part of the one when Rod Sando and I came really close on that, but it was that lack of support is why that fell through. And it continues to be that it's always contested. There's no philosophical agreement within the state on how to deal with that land. The appraisal will be complex. Just for us to do the appraisal for the Thiblatnik payment, and that was a simpler appraisal because that's merely to make a payment. It's not to get rid of land. So it'll be a complex land appraisal factor in there, and you have the wilderness kind of sits over a part of that value. So just so you know, that's not going to be a cheap process, but it is a comparative, and there's not a lot of big land tracts that are sold in the state. In either case, a land exchange or if we bought the land in the boundary waters for the state, the Thiblatnik payment is going to go up. It will increase because you'll increase the acreage holding of the federal land inside the boundary waters. So if you follow that track, the Secure Rural Schools payment for a land exchange, in other words, we get rid of 200,000 acres of federal land outside the wilderness, it's going to decrease that Secure Rural payment to the counties for schools and roads. So you need to watch that. I don't know how much. I have to go through those calculations to see. But if we do a straight land exchange and we acquire 89,000 acres in the boundary waters and we reduce our acreage outside the wilderness by 200,000 acres, you're going to increase the Thiblatnik, but you're going to decrease the school truck, the secure rural schools payment. And I don't know if the two offset one another. So just so you're aware of that. The PILT payment, it may decrease a little bit too because that's based on federal acreage. It depends how that goes. So that's just, you know, kind of the whole bit, some background. The Forest Service.
Jim, is it possible to do a combination of exchange and L&W?
Thank you. That leads right into the
point. Oh, okay.
The question of what I was always dismayed at was it was always placed on a forester's lap, well, you're not doing this for the school trust, you won't do that for those lands. They say those are state lands. It's a state decision. And I think you've got a letter from our director of lands from a few years ago that pretty well stated that if the state of Minnesota wants to get out of that ownership in the boundary waters of those school trust lands, we want to buy it. We want to acquire it. And we assume as an agency that would probably be some combination, Senator, just like you talked about, of purchase and exchange. And what that ratio would be, I don't know. It depends. In today's world, that purchase could be a higher percentage. 3 years ago, the exchange would have been a higher percentage. It all depends what the federal budget is at or what kind of momentum is gained in Congress to support the purchase, where the exchange would be administrative unless there's congressional action to do the exchange. Or the purchases comes right through the appropriation side. But as an agency, if the state wants to get out of that ownership, we would like to acquire it. We aren't trying to block that process. We want to be part of it. We want to be the ones that would acquire that ownership to boundary waters. Have always been there, but that's gotten twisted around many ways. Forest Service or the federal government has never said, or in my tenure on the forest, and it's getting longer all the time now, that Forest Service has never said we don't want you to get out of that ownership. That's a state decision. And if I look back into things, into my files or whatever, pre-Jim Sanders, we've always, you know, if the state wants to get out of that land, we would like to acquire it. But it's not a Forest Service or federal government decision on that. That's a state decision because it's owned by the state.
Other questions for Jim?
It just seems to me the secure rural lands payment seems pretty secure. I'm worried about this Blatnik thing with the state of the federal budget. I mean, what's to prevent?
Well, it's in law right now, so the Appropriation Committee has no choice.
So there's no child left behind in law. I mean, I think everything would be.
I'm not worried on that. I wouldn't worry so much about will the Appropriation Committee continue to fund that or not. I would worry about someone trying to change the legislation and say, wait a minute. I mean, I was born and raised in Montana. There's, I don't know how many million acres of federal land of wilderness in the state of Montana. And so I could see the state of Montana say, we want a piece of that action too. And so pretty soon that $6 million payment could be in the hundreds of millions of dollars to billions. And so someone, if that's the case, I can see the Philatelic Act being repealed. I have not seen for my time here in the state or then previously to come into Minnesota. I was worked in D.C. for the Forest Service for about 6 years, and I spent 1 year of my life with the Interior Appropriations Committee, so I spent a lot of time with Congress. I don't see that kind of thing going not being funded. But as it gets higher in value, it draws more attention. So that's all I would... I worry about that not being funded. The worry would be someone would try to repeal the act.
Other questions?
I just put that for your awareness. It's so important.
So you can tell me if this is just an oversimplified interpretation of this then. So basically, the school trust lands within the Boundary Waters canoe area benefits the counties?
Not mathematically or financially, they don't. They, because the only way the counties get money for the Boundary Waters is through the federal government, and none of the payments are based on those school trust lands in the Boundary Waters. They're all based on the federal ownership in the Boundary Waters or federal ownership on the entire Superior National Forest.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, though, but there are some school trust lands owned by the federal government.
No, we don't own any school trust lands. That's it's unique to the state. At statehood, it's when every state in the union is.
So that they're all state owned.
Yeah, they're all state owned. We make payments. The federal government, because we're not, we don't pay. There's no taxes paid to the local governments for the federal land like the state land. We make bill payment, and we make this. And this is where the terminology adds to the confusion, that we make the Secure Rural Schools payment to help offset the fact we are not paying taxes. And so the revenues, that puts a revenue stream that's targeted for school, public schools and public roads in the county. The county can decide how they want to split that, unless the state tells them how to split it. I don't know that. So that's where... It was easier 18 months ago, 2 years ago, it was 25%. So 25% of our receipts went to the counties for schools and roads. And the change of the name of the new bill, it's called the Secure Rural Schools, is the act. And so it's easy then to confuse School Trust and Secure Rural Schools Act.
Okay. So then schools and roads and counties benefit from... get some financial benefit from having federal land within their county.
Yes, they do, yep.
But the schools get no benefit from state land.
Well, in the wilderness, there's no revenue stream for the state, for the wilderness school trust lands.
Right.
Outside the wilderness, you guys, I'm sure, are seeing this revenue stream to the counties or to the schools. From school trust lands outside the Boundary Waters.
Isn't the reality of the situation?
That helps.
School trust lands inside the Boundary Waters are not returning revenue to either local government or the state of Minnesota.
Correct.
Just because of the restrictions on management.
Yes.
The payback would be the recreational opportunities that are there and the protection of wilderness values.
Yeah.
That's really what we get out of those lands.
Yeah. And the Boundary Waters, as an entity, if you look at the Boundary Waters, back in the early 90s, the economic analysis for the Boundary Waters was about a $30 million value add to the surrounding communities in their economy. Thus, down the road, today, as people spend money in the county, sales tax and all that are coming. Today, I would say that what was $30 million back in the 1990s, 91, 92, somewhere there today, it's over $100 million to $150 million.
Would you repeat that again?
Back in 91 to 92, we completed an environmental impact statement that evaluated our management plan for the Boundary Waters. And in that statement, our economists said that the Boundary Waters added to the surrounding communities about $30 million in value. And that's from the recreational dollars spent, it's drawing people into the community, whether they rented the Boundary Waters or not. You drive down the main street of Ely, and you see all kinds of Boundary Waters, this, Boundary Waters, that. You know, it's the draw. Today, I would say, and this, I'm not an economist, but my guess is that has easily over $100 million. I mean, it's just simple. Given the amount of use, the amount of money, if you look in those communities, that when the Boundary Waters is open, I mean, when people are using the Boundary Waters, not when it's open, but when they're using the Boundary Waters, it's a crowd. You drive up the North Shore on a Friday or Saturday, and you head to Hovland, you're by yourself as soon as you leave the city limits of Grand Marais. If you go up the Gunflint Trail, you got a crowd with you. I mean, so it's, but I would say the Boundary Waters is easily $120 million, I'm being conservative, of value to the surrounding communities.
So is the amount of school trust lands within the Boundary Waters, is that proportional then what the value is, or is the value, so if the school trust lands, and I forget what they're, what portion of the Boundary Waters?
They're about 89,000 acres of the one, little over a million acres. So they're whatever the
math is. And 1/9%.
Yeah.
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 Okay, so would you say that that the schools own or 10% of that? Roughly, if we're just talking rough numbers, is that a fair conclusion to come to or not?
9%. They contribute to that, but I think when I say the $100 million, $150 million that the Boundary Waters contributes, is looking at it as a wilderness, the Boundary Waters wilderness, what it does in drawing people, no matter who owns the property in the wilderness, whether it was all state-owned or all federal-owned, that won't change much. And it's not direct payments that anybody makes. It's just the value add for the recreations coming in.
John.
I have a couple of questions. It says here that 17,800 acres are state acquired.
Yeah.
And what did the state acquire them for?
Well, that would be back probably in 18, what have you, shortly after statehood. And that would be the Burnside School Forest. It's now inside the wilderness, a portion of the Burnside School Forest that Kathy or someone else in DNR could help with. I would guess it's in the early 1900s. Maybe after statehood, before the federal, before the National Forest was created in 1909.
Yeah, I think it was 1904, if I remember right.
And is this the area, Kathy, maybe you could answer this, that we made into a state wilderness area?
Yes.
Yes, that is the lands that were defined or described as acquired, but it really was acquired by a federal grant.
But about in the last 6 or 7 years, the state said through legislation that that would be managed as wilderness. No money is appropriated to the state to do that. What we do, there are campsites, there are portages in the wilderness on state land. We maintain those. We don't differentiate who owns the property inside the Boundary Waters. When our crews go in to maintain campsites and portages, we just do it. There used to be a revenue stream between the state and the Forest Service to help offset that. But in the mid-90s or mid to late 90s, that went away just because of state budgets. And we just continue to maintain every campsite, every portage in the Boundary Waters, regardless of who owns it. So we don't differentiate that.
Go ahead, Jim.
If my numbers are right, you're paying about, if you're going to be paying $6 million and you own 800,000 acres, you're paying like about $70 an acre in
The number's going to be higher than that.
The number will be higher for the five Latinink because that $6 million is based on total Forest Service ownership. Part of those payments are based on Forest Service ownership of the Superior National Forest. The PILT payment and the Secure Rural Schools payment is based on total Forest Service ownership. The five Latinink payment is based on the 800,000 acres in the wilderness. That's the only one, John, that's focused on the wilderness.
Yeah, I thought you said, though, that payment was going to go up to about $6 million.
Yeah, okay, it's up around $6 million, yeah, if you divide that out.
I was doing the total. I had it figured out that if you even it all out, it was about $85 an acre.
Yeah.
But I was all sources.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the other payments are a little more than that. Let's just say it's $75 an acre.
But remember that don't hang your hat too tight on that as the appraised value of the state lands. Because the appraisal that we use, the methodology for the appraisal we use to appraise that 800,000 acres in the Boundary Waters is not the same methodology for a land exchange or a land purchase. Because when we make payments, one of the factors in any appraisal is what's the highest and best use of the land. And for making a payment, our appraisal was determined that because it's wilderness does not affect the appraisal. That's not part of that highest and best use determination by the appraiser, because all you're doing is making a payment. Not all. I don't mean to oversimplify. If we were doing a land exchange or a land or land acquisition, highest and best use under the wilderness umbrella would be part of that valuation. So that will change and probably drop those prices a bit. Some would say we'll raise those prices because the building waters is so popular. But you just go to it's a comparative. Appraisals and is an appraisal method, and Kathy and others here could talk about the federal appraisal process. But so anyway, that's all I'd say is be careful doing the math and saying the school trust it equals, take that $6 million, divide it by, you know, the total acreage in the Boundary Waters, and then apply it to that 89,000 acres of school trust land. That will not be wholly accurate. It'll get you on the field play.
Well, here was where I was kind of trying to go. If we were to sell a chunk of this to the feds, we kind of get a twofer out of it as long as Thigh Blatnick doesn't get repealed, because we would get full fair market value, and then on top of that, we would pick up the Thigh Blatnick payment of yep. $80 an acre that would,
yep.
And in fact, it might be well more than that, because if the value of this property is two or three times what's up, the average value in the Boundary Waters, because it's a higher proportion of waterfront, then it might be we could be getting a couple hundred bucks an acre.
So it all goes back to the Iron Range delegation.
Yeah.
Well, but it
so
just
got that well in hand. The new money all goes to the counties.
I think for us, right. No.
Yeah.
Let's see.
The Thigh Blatnick payment.
But the purchase price would not.
No. The
yeah,
purchase
okay.
price would go into the trust.
But to go back to the line of questioning that Representative Dietrich was pursuing, this is a pretty significant shift if we can figure out a resolution to this issue, because it takes us from a situation where neither the state or the local governments are getting any revenue from these lands to opening some pretty substantial potential for either one-time cash to flow or annual payments to be made to local governments.
And
or both.
Still get the economic impact to
Bingo.
The surrounding communities.
Yeah,
it's like
changes.
A win.
That brings us back to the range
All
delegation.
Right.
Yeah.
There we go. Well, Jim, as you know, since you and Commissioner Sando got together, two things have happened, actually, relatively in close future here. One, school trust fund earnings are no longer supplement. Supplant the funding, but supplement. So, you know, that does give us some additional encouragement.
Puts it on top of it.
But the other thing is that, and I'm not sure forest management is always thought in these terms, but consolidation of lands for forest management is something yep. that we value more than probably we ever have. Yep. Whether we're talking about managing wilderness or we're talking about forest yep. lands.
Exactly, because what I've been doing, as an example, if you look at that acreage breakdown, the counties own land in the Boundary Waters, and next year, Lake County will no longer own any land in the Boundary Waters. We're acquiring all their land through land exchange, and we're consolidating their ownership on the southern part of the forest. And I'm queued up to do the same thing with Cook County
yeah.
and with St. Louis County, all around land consolidation.
Right.
So yeah, because
and,
of that.
And so, Mr. Chairman, generally, you know, I would agree with you that some combination would be good. Certainly, to get the state lands get us out of the wilderness management. And as you say, it's probably, you know, and I won't get the rest of the range delegation or necessarily to agree with me, but I would agree that 200,000 to 300,000 acres is unrealistic. However, you know, some of the areas, you know, that aren't even close to the Boundary Waters, where we could do some forest land consolidation, and you know these a lot better than I do. It would seem to me the combination of the two, some exchanges and then some money, would be a way to get it done.
Yeah, I just look where my part, where the federal property is scattered ownership, up in Pigeon River,
yeah,
over in the Calatoga Purchase Unit on those two ends of the Superior National Forest, we've got scattered ownership. If you go to many of the state parks, here sits a 40 acres of federal ownership, Cascade State Forest. Our state park has got federal ownership in the middle of that as well. So we have all of that type of thing that sits out there is where do you begin that discussion of consolidation? Because that's exactly, Senator, where I'm at with you. I agree totally that consolidation, it simplifies our management because we're constantly exchanging permits back and forth. We want to collaborate on our management. We will always do that. The consolidation, just there's just one more process.
If, Mr. Chair, I mean, you know, if we're talking about 100,000 acres in the boundary waters, you know, and we realize the value difference, but I mean, and we said, well, you know, what we're really after, in all fairness, is 100,000 acres of forest land, as you say, that we can consolidate in the state lands, and then the remainder might be cash. I mean, that would be up to me to convince the delegation, but that makes a lot of sense to me.
Is that a doable acreage?
Yeah. If I look at if I just start with in the Pigeon River or the Cabotoga purchase unit, you're over 100,000 acres there in those two areas. Or if we say there's not, and that's not liquidating all of that land, but if we start looking at other places, like my example of Cascade State Park, we've got land inside of that. How about get us out of that? And there are other places where you have a small federal 40 in the middle of the state. You put some parameters to it. I think it's very doable to count that 100,000 acres or 89,000 acres. You do it acre for acre and equalize the value with cash. That keeps it within, that's very doable. There's another piece of property I'll just put on the table. It has nothing to do with Forest Service. It's the Beltrami Islands. Kathy, you know, others could talk about that. Those are over northwestern part of the state. They are owned by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The state of Minnesota leases those lands from the Fish and Wildlife Service. It's around 100,000 acres, too. And you're paying the federal government a lease for that. It's not a very high lease. I think it's $1 an acre.
It was a buck for 10 years.
Yeah. But that's where it's at today. If somebody says, wait, we're going to change that appraisal method, not that that will be easy, and we're trying to change our cabin appraisal method and see what's happening with that. But anyway, so there's another piece of property that is federally owned. It's up in the northwestern part of the state, but the state has, you have campgrounds in there and heavy timber management up in that area. It's very productive land. There's a lot coming off of that. I just put that on the table, too. But I think the consolidation, as I'm always interested in consolidation, I do that. We do try to do that with our land changes all the time.
Right. All right, I want to continue this. I just want to do two things. If you want contact information on Jim, he dropped a load of business cards here, and I'm betting he's got more in his pocket if you want them.
That's right now, but I can write them down.
And then we
print them out this morning.
We all have to recognize that on this issue, we'll walk in the shadow of Tommy Rukavina. And I understand, Greg, you're in a position to describe some work you've been doing for Representative Rukavina on land exchange in the BWCA.
Actually, for Senator Saxton.
Yeah.
I don't know if Representative Rukavina would be.
No, he wouldn't.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay, Mr. Chairman. We picked up Senator Rukavina's bill. And it was what, 14 pages?
I knew he'd get into this somewhere. Huh?
It was 14 pages?
14 pages.
We there were certain parts that we decided that we could get it down to, and now we're at a page and a half. But this is just to give us some ideas and the potential that we might be able to think of some things. And I'd like to have Greg just go over it, if it's okay, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman.
That's why I brought it up.
This is more of a kind of a bare bones approach, but it does try to get at the issue of the exchange. And again, with Senator Saxag on the Iron Range delegation, this doesn't talk about a sale or purchase of land, although that could still happen. That doesn't mean as part of an agreement that couldn't be part of this. But it is. This only talks about the exchange part of the right.
But it's non-exclusive to exchange.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And what it does is, if you see in paragraph A, you have the Commissioner of Natural Resources, so shall vigorously pursue an agreement. In other words, we want to make sure that, I mean, a lot of times you put things on the books and they kind of do it and maybe do it 10 years from now. We want them to go forward quickly to come up and try to come up with an agreement. And in paragraph B, you basically say that in the exchange of deeds without formal legal title opinions, there are some outs here that allow you to exchange title with the federal government as long as you meet conditions 1 and 2. Subdivision 2 is the inclusion of county and city-owned lands. I didn't see city-owned lands on here, and it sounds like they may have the county-owned lands out before any state lands are. I mean, if they can work out those agreements,
we're
working on that. But this would allow them to be part of the same agreement. doesn't require them to be part of an agreement, but if a county or city wanted to be involved and they have lands within the wilderness, they could be part of it. It's just an option for them. Subdivision 3 is probably an important one, especially what Mr. Sanders was talking about. This would say that, because right now on our exchange law, you have to go, if you've got riparian land, you've got to exchange it for riparian land. There are some outs in the boundary waters, but they're pretty complicated. What this would just say is that we're not going to worry about whether or not we're getting riparian lands in exchange. We know that the boundary waters lands are riparian. What we're more concerned is just getting out of it and getting productive land or land that the state would want to own.
That doesn't mean you couldn't have a change in value, obviously. I mean, the value shouldn't be different. It's just that...
But it's kind of what we were talking about before with the 300,000 acres versus the 100,000 acres that the state has. And then this land status classification, this provides a process through the Land Exchange Board for what happens with the lands that the state acquires, what they become. And then in paragraph B, you basically say that anything that's exchanged for school trust land, which becomes school trust status, would have to be classified as forestry lands that are capable of generating revenue. This is to ensure that those lands do become productive land and aren't exchanged for land within a state park or something like that.
But that could be exchanged for an exchange.
Yeah, you can do a three-way.
Again, this is kind of yes. What do I have a deal with you?
We'll work that out later.
And then basically just a boilerplate, the commissioner may recommend adjustments to boundaries of state forest. That's a general power the commissioner has, just to kind of clarify that. And then also the Land Exchange Board, the commissioner performs duties at the request. And I know the commissioner does that anyways. Subdivision 5, then this is the annual report. Basically, we're saying to the commissioner to go forward and try to come up with an agreement with the federal government over this, and then provide us with an annual report of what you've done, the progress and vigor of the agreement. Report should include a detailed list of activities and a discussion of any obstacles to reach an agreement. So in other words, come back to us and tell us why you haven't been able to get to one so far, if you have. So that's kind of a bearable,
John.
Kathy, I think it would help us all to understand what would be the best outcome if we had an idea, not of how much you make per acre on the average school trust land, but what we might make per acre on an average of forestry school trust land in the vicinity of the Superior National Forest, the kind of land we're going to be trading for. What do you think that answer is? Do you think you could tell us now, or do you think you'd have to go back and study?
Well, one of the requests from the committee was to do a number per acre. We did a number per acre for forest purposes, but that was the whole acreage calculation. So we didn't do one based upon an area. I would think we could go back and do that exercise. Mm-hmm. Based upon an area, but we don't have that number.
So what do you think you make per acre forestry land looking at the whole state?
Well, we did some numbers per acre gross in the lab from 2002 to 2008. It ranges from $3.57 an acre up to $5.67.
$3.57
to $5.67. And that's gross. And that includes the real estate activity, but excludes the minerals activity.
All right. So, what's our net? Let's say it's $4 or $4.50. Who cares? $4.50 an acre, and what are we paying to do that? What's our net take?
Okay, I got numbers. We can go over all that. But like the year of 5.67, the net on forestry was $3,768,000.
But per acre.
But per acre? Oh, don't have the net per acre for you.
Can you calculate it?
We can calculate it in a minute.
Didn't
we say it was about 75%, so it would be a dollar?
Over. Yeah,
seemed like it.
Seems right.
What am I missing here, Doctor? If we traded this whole thing out and we got 200,000 acres of forestry land outside the boundary waters and we make $1 an acre, we're making $200,000 a year, maybe. And if we leave it in Thigh-Blatnick, wouldn't we be getting...
To the county, though.
Well, yeah, yeah, okay, I get that. So we'd be getting $80 an acre in taxes?
But we'll get them both.
And you'll get, you would also, if we purchased the state land, you would
have. Right, and, have we, and we'd have $120 million in the trust fund. Let's say we make 5% on that. That would be
We're talking about part of it. Point is, John, if you don't have any forests for your wood industries or your energy industries, they're gone.
Well, we're not giving up any forestry here, though, because it's all in forest use right now.
Well,
I agree with that. We're not talking
about Tommy Rigovino was a logger.
I know he's talked to me about it for days over the last month. And LCCMR.
The only thing to make sure that we too are in the logging business.
Right.
Sure.
And Forest Service, the Superior sells about 8,000 acres of forest products a year annually. That's about, we'd sell about 120,000 cords a year off the Superior alone. So, I mean, because there used to be a debate 10, 12 years ago that, well, the federal government's getting out of the logging business. No, it's so critical to our natural resource management. First, we're required to provide an even flow of wood products by law. And second is we've got all our other requirements for habitat, hazard fuel reduction, everything else. That we are in the logging business, and that's our key tool. And so,
Mr. Chairman, I don't disagree with that, except that the Superior National Forest is some of the greatest set aside, so to speak, in the United States. I mean, and they're beautiful, and we want them. But I mean, you're kind of, to a large extent, you're in the business of the boundary waters and those types of ownerships. And what we're thinking here is the states and is kind of the wood ownership business. You know,
I'm in that too.
I know you are, but you and I both know that there is a difference.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I mean, I get impacted, there's a lot of people who love my land for different reasons.
That's
not
right.
Buy our land, that federal land for different reasons, but I think we've demonstrated through fires like Ham Lake Fire and Cavy Lake Fire and a few others why it's important that we can be very effective with timber harvest for dealing with hazard fuels, and we help to keep the forest products industry going, too. Right now, they are in a really tough strait.
Yep.
But I think I'm seeing a reduction in some of the debates over timber harvest. And we'll have a decision that's coming out here shortly. I think it's at the public or being printed right now. We analyzed 50,000 acres, and we're selling, we're going to harvest timber off 20,000 acres of that 50,000 acres. There's been no appeals to that.
You will get no argument out of me that you aren't doing better now than you did 10, 15 years ago. No question about it. And I'll attribute some to policy and some to your administration, but still, you know, we like to have her closer to the vest, and you know, we and different parts of the state are.
Senator, I understand what you're saying.
Right, and just so we don't start sliding into the details on this, I want to keep this kind of up at a 10,000 foot level and make sure that we're all on the same page here. We haven't given DNR a chance to provide any overall comment. You got any reaction to what you've heard here before I go to this next piece?
I'd like to talk a little bit about Utah as an example. When I was out in D.C. a year or two ago, I visited with it was a Eastern Western Land Commissioners Conference, and Utah found that the way they could make a land exchange work with the federal government was to get special congressional legislation so they could bypass the NEPA process. And they recommended that if Minnesota is serious about trying to do a land exchange with the federal government in the BWCA, that is really the route that needs to be tackled, because otherwise the process and all the steps that you need to do would be too complicated. And they were successful and able to get a land exchange through that way. And so I didn't know what kind of reaction you thought, if you know about that example, and what you feel about that.
I can't lobby first.
Right.
But I can tell you the realities of it. And that's where Commissioner Merriam and I had long discussions when he first came in about doing a land exchange to include boundary waters. I said, there's a transaction cost, I call it. And that's all those administrative processes. That if you would do an EIS, that EIS alone, not into the appraisals or anything else, that EIS alone, I would estimate would be over $3 million. And we approach that as a partnership. It's not all federal doing that. It would be the state and the Forest Service would come together to do that administrative process and even getting through it. There's no guarantees at the end because I know the debate that we have in the state of Minnesota, I will be taken to court over that decision. And it'll go through that court process. And that, I mean, I'm not berating the court process either because I'll take that kind of interaction with our government versus other countries' interactions. So that's just the reality that's there. So I think that a legislative would be a way to resolve that, what they need, what our Minnesota delegation needs, and it's more than Congressman Overstar and our two senators, but what they need is consensus. And then they need to hear from the Rains delegation consensus, but they need to hear some consensus signal from the citizens in their districts to help them with that. Because Commissioner Sando and Ron, when we were, 97, we had that consensus. We were able to almost deliver that consensus, and we lost it. And that would have been to do the purchase of then about $50 to $60 million. I say it's probably doubled now just based on this other payment. And that was tough getting consensus around that. I think the other will be a challenge to get consensus, but I think that's that from a Forest Service perspective or federal government perspective, that's the most efficient. Is that the best? We'll have to let the politicians address that.
John? No. As long as we've got you here and you're sat there for that whole year at the Appropriations Committee in the in the House. Let's say we actually got our heads together, and let's just imagine that we decided we were going to do 50-50 because we need 100,000 acres of exchange to do the kind of consolidation that would make sense with the state lands and the county lands. And we said, okay, we want to do 100,000 acres of exchange, and we want to buy the rest, and you know, that's going to cost us half of $120 million, $60 million bucks.
Yeah.
Is that so big a number that in the context of having a huge fight amongst ourselves about excluding it from an EIS to do a quicker land exchange, that we might not be able to get it all wrapped into one little package and get that kind of a number? Or do you think we have to be asking for $10 million a year?
And I'd start with the $60 million and then let the appropriate, and once the committee, whether the committee funds it or not, in total, once they agree to begin, what I saw, John, is once the committee begins to fund an acquisition like that, they will do it to the end. They've got to balance their books. And so they may do a $10 million at a shot in maybe 5 or 6 years, but they would do it unless someone. And as long as the delegation, Minnesota delegation, stays consolidated or in consensus, they'll keep right on going. But I don't think they would fund it all at one time. In today's world, they might.
Well, and we've seen situations like on the Forest Legacy Funds. If you happen to hit the right appropriation cycle and there's not a lot of competition, you don't know what might happen.
Yeah,
you know?
See, when Commissioner when Commissioner Sando and I got together on this, it was the Clinton administration. They were wanting to buy in California, I think it was the reserve forest or whatever, some private property out in California. Well, I know that the committee or that the formula for Land and Water Conservation Fund keeps it from being skewed geographically across the country, that if X dollars goes to the west, there's a certain percentage of that has to come to the east. And so I talked to Commissioner Sando and said, Rod, we've got an opportunity here. They're going after $100 to $200 million purchase out there. We can slide in as to help with the help the committee balance. And so that's how we shot through on that. We came very close. But it's all based on consensus. John, you're touching on probably one big area. To exempt the federal government from NEPA is a huge debate all by itself. It doesn't matter what that's tied to. There's your hot button.
But, you know, if we had an agreement, we might be able to make that process go a lot more smoothly anyway.
Yeah,
if you take away the threat of what's going to happen to Wilderness Acres. Let me see if I can test where we're at on this. And I'm not naive enough to present this as an issue with only two sides, there are multiple perspectives to this. But for the purposes of this conversation, it looks to me like we have a willing player in the two primary parties here. We've got the state that has some pretty profound motivation, particularly at this point in time, to try to increase dollar returns to the education system in the state. And we're not going to find a lot of opportunities to do that outside of the public land base, and these school trust lands are probably the 800-pound gorilla in that conversation. On the flip side, I hear Jim saying that we still have a willing partner carried over from the 1997 attempt, and they see it in their interest to acquire these lands if we make this decision that we want to divest ourselves of the ownership of them.
Yeah, you have a letter from us, the governor or the commissioner, Commissioner Garber got a letter from us in 2002. It came from the, not the chief of the Forest Service at the time, it came from the director of lands, saying if you want, if the state wants to get out, what Ron just said, if you want to get out of that acreage, we want to acquire it. We see some combination that we're just talking about here as a way to get there. And we've gone through a couple, we've got different administration. I don't see any change there. That position is not key upon Jim Sanders. That's a Forest Service position. And so, yeah, we've always, it's a state decision. We'll follow you through with that.
And me and Mr. Chairman, with along with what you said, it sounds to me like maybe one of the easiest parts of the thing is find if indeed you were going to go acre for acre and then make the difference in value, the easiest part might be finding the 100,000 acres to exchange. The 100,000 won't be hard to find.
Well, that's going to be the next step on this, Senator. Let's come back to the overriding premise, because that's, I think, where we need to go for the next step in the conversation, is to actually get something on the table. But given what I've said, this creates the opportunity to find some blend of exchange and sales that would make the school trust land issue in the boundary waters go away, that it's going to benefit both state and local government fairly significantly.
I agree with you. The parallel track you need to begin running is with the congressional delegation.
Yep. But
before you get too far into it, because otherwise, if you get out very far with you're going to do an acre for acre, we want to divest and try to place the state a little differently. The state wants to divest of their ownership of boundary waters, 80-pound school trust, 89,000 acres. And so we're giving the DNR we want to do an acre for acre exchange and offset the value through federal funding for the Land Water Conservation Fund. If you get very far into that before the Minnesota delegation is with you on that, the polarization around that will cause that to derail.
Sure, and we've talked about that. I mean, I think we recognize we got some work to do there. But I'm looking for the fatal flaw in this.
Well, I think the real issue is does the state make a bad bargain by doing that as compared with the alternative of just taking cash? Because unless my math is totally wrong, if we just took $120 million in cash, we would make, let's say, $6 million a year on it. It might be more, once in a while it might be less, but most people think that you can actually assume that you can make 4 or 5% a year on your money over a long period of time. Oh, you're just thinking about the last 2 years. You're almost back to even. Come on. But anyway, let's say you could make that kind of money, and you're giving up 100,000 acres to do it, just to keep our math simple. Am I right? That's like, it's like, what's...
$6 million. But, John, the exact opposite end of that is can never be a money deal. It's got to be value of land for value of land, and we need 300,000 acres. What we just talked about here is the middle ground.
Yeah, I hate the idea, though, that you're giving up $60 an acre of annual revenue when we're going to make a dollar for it. I don't think a dollar is the right number. I totally agree with what you're saying. There probably
are.
Maybe the right number is 50, 1,000 acres on the exchange, because we ought to be trying to get the land which really makes what we've got the most productive by accomplishing significant consolidation and getting more cash if our primary interest is thinking about the school trust fund and not losing forest land to a large, you know, we're not going to lose the Forest Service's property outside the boundary waters. It's just we're going to take more cash for land we're not cutting anyway.
The disturbing part about what you just said to me is that it tells me that my mental faculties are deteriorating at a more rapid rate than I thought, because I would have sworn it was you who suggested it had to be a combination of land exchange and sale.
I do, but I'm sort of shocked by the economic differential.
Right. You can't argue
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, let's say we are more conservative and we said, well, you could make $30 an acre, and we can – maybe the problem is we're just not using our school trust fund very efficiently where we are using it for timber. We probably all
– There's a different subcommittee studying that.
Yeah.
Is there not?
But they don't have me on there. I'd like to know who's there representing the schools.
Am I thinking about this wrong, or are my numbers wrong? Well, I've been known to get a decimal point wrong.
I think what you're doing is you're focusing on the lands within the BWCA, the school trust lands within
yeah.
there. But we also have school trust lands outside the BWCA that are scattered. So taking the land in an exchange from within the boundary waters and consolidating your ownership outside makes that land more valuable too. So I think you have to look at the whole picture of what you're doing.
Yeah, we might want to make for a larger exchange. And I mean, it's a scientific question. It's not, I mean, it's not just a dollars and cents question.
Sure.
I totally am on board with that. And I think we could go to Congress, and it's not probably a huge deal whether we say to them, hey, the boot's got to be $85 million or $90 million, or it's going to be $60 million. But we ought to figure out where we get a reasonable bang for our buck on the exchange and not just try to exchange a whole bunch of land. I think the range delegation, I understand the theory of what they were saying. They didn't want the idea that they were going to not get some of both. But we missed that opportunity once before. I think with this administration, lock on funding going up, we do have a chance to actually get some pretty big bucks and get the exchange a little streamlined, maybe without too much baggage with NEPA.
Richard.
Another thing to think about is to go to 30,000 feet elevation and talk about land ownership. And one piece of that is let's do land and water conservation. Let's have the Forest Service purchase the school trust lands. Let's have the Forest Service and DNR work on land consolidation outside the wilderness.
Amen.
And that
bingo.
What you have is instead of taking that school trust lands in the boundary waters and saying we're going to do a purchase and exchange, then you're going to get in the mud, and that maybe you stay get higher yet, and talk about we want the Forest Service and the DNR, and you can do that both within the state system and within the federal system. Directing us to do work on a land exchange that consolidates ownership, but then at that 30,000 foot level, we're going to force the federal government is going to purchase. The state wants to get out of that ownership. We're going to purchase that school trust lands in the wilderness to solve that issue. But we want a bigger issue is land consolidation of the 3.2 million acres of federal land in the Superior, where you consolidate the DNR and Forest Service ownership.
And that's how to minimize administrative costs on those lands for both parties.
And also then you're not talking, you take the boundary waters factor, I call it, out of this equation a little bit. You take the exemption of NEPA out of this equation, which unto itself, when you start talking exempting of NEPA or addressing NEPA, it is no longer a Minnesota issue. It is a national issue. And Congress, even with a consolidated 10-member delegation from Minnesota, will have a very difficult time addressing exempting something controversial like the boundary waters from NEPA. And so if you pull that away from this and just say, let's get up to 30,000 feet, and what we're trying to do in the state of Minnesota is deal with this quilt of land ownership.
Right.
And so we want the Forest Service and the DNR to work on an aggressive land exchange that's based on the administrative land exchange principles that we both have. And maybe through that we may need to get some help But then another part of that 30,000 foot is a small little bit over here of 89,000 acres within the wilderness. We would like Congress to purchase that land because the DNR might get out of it. And that way you're just dealing with, that is a separate issue, you're dealing with the other is a separate issue. And you keep, you don't mix the boundary waters and the NEPA and land exchanges and all that debate in there. I just would say maybe go a little higher in elevation and see if there's a different way to approach a similar thing. But you're talking about school trust in northeastern Minnesota. It happens to include 89,000 acres, but Kathy and John know that there's a lot more school trust outside the wilderness than in the wilderness. So one way to help that school trust outside the wilderness is deal with consolidation.
Yeah.
And let's deal with the
so
wilderness.
So we're going right now.
But then you would be talking above the boundary waters, you'd be higher, not focused just on the boundary waters. That's, for my ears, that's a sticky widget that makes it more complicated for consensus.
Yeah, but frankly.
Speaking of 30,000 feet, you know, we're always trying to figure out where somebody is in the United States, so we've got this Google. And when you come way up and you take away Alaska, the state of Minnesota's got more public land than almost any state in the United States. I mean, it's if you look at the green blotches. But the thing is, if you're in Utah or in your Montana or you're in even California, it's federal land.
Or Nevada, then you have BLM almost.
But in Minnesota, we've got this
mix
quilt work. Yeah. You know, even though we have a lot of public land,
and that quilt is part of I embrace that rather than fight it. I mean, there's little I can do about it. So we embrace that. I mean, we're close together. And I think over the years, I used the blowdown example of 10 years ago. Use that blowdown as an example from 10 years ago. We demonstrated, your public servants of the county, the state, and the Forest Service, we were able to demonstrate your government was very successful. We really worked close together on all of that. And the businesses were part of that close work. And the fact that we've only lost one life since the blowdown, and that was an unfortunate suicide after the Ham Lake Fire, we have faced some extremely complex life-threatening situations and been very successful by how closely we have worked together. And that quilt of that fragmented ownership, we are working very closely and playing really good together. So that's, even with that quilt, all three levels of government are cooperating, very effective, much more so than I have seen in other parts of the country. 30 plus, almost 40 years now with the federal government, so that's what's fun about it. There might be, if you get a little higher is all I'm suggesting, and deal with school trust, your theme, Senator, of consolidation, and the bottom water is the piece of that, but it's not the central point.
I understand,
I think you have a better consensus solution.
Yeah.
I'm feeling like we ought to talk a little bit about next steps here, but I don't want to cut off any additional conversation if you think it's value added to this discussion.
I just want to add a few legal tidbits.
Fine.
Okay. Land exchange, most of the provisions of the land exchange laws are in statute, and obviously you can do legislation to override those for the particular thing. But legislation, any land exchange under the Constitution requires the approval, unanimous approval of the land exchange board. So that's your governor, attorney general, state auditor. So they need to be in the process early. The other is land sales. The statutes direct that we sell state land through public sale in most instances. And for acquired parcels, the university parcels, you can pass legislation to sell it directly. But for the school trust lands, it's in the Constitution. Has to be by public sale. And so the only way around that is for the federal government to do a condemnation. And Mr. Sanders informed me before the meeting that they would need probably congressional approval in order to do a condemnation. So keep that little factor in mind, too.
And others on my side, the higher level, we have an executive order that requires us to not reduce our holdings of riparian lands or wetlands, not riparian, but wetlands. So there's a lot of, I mean, there's what you have at the state, there's a mirror at the federal level of convolutedness that goes the way it goes through all that. But what Kathy's talking about regarding, you know, this condemnation, I mean, we have a very narrow, small window that we use condemnation, the federal government uses condemnation. I've used it once in my career. It was for like a road right away. A person was blocking public's access to a national forest land with the road, and it took the Secretary of Agriculture to sign that condemnation. It's out of the Chief of the Forest Service's hands. We use it very sparingly. But then for the committee, if it, at the legislative side, if it's easier for them to address some of that and help you with that part of the process. But it first is all based upon some consensus.
But I think that what Kathy's saying, though, is important to make sure to understand that if you do the federal government purchase of those school trust lands, it has to either be through a condemnation or a public sale. And unless you're going to get condemnation authority for it like you did with Voyagers, probably like they did with Voyagers, it would be difficult. I mean, you're going to have to figure out some way to condemn them.
Yeah, public sale isn't going to work.
I hear what you're saying very clearly.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Yeah, what I mean is I already have, the Forest Service has the authority to do condemnation right now.
But would you do it at that scale?
No. We don't, and the Secretary of Agriculture won't do it at that scale. I won't guarantee. Voyagers was a small footprint. That was just for the entry point.
Yeah.
And that was probably 10 acres or less. So we have the authority to do condemnation, but we've never exercised it on a very large
scale.
And again,
that's one of those details.
I understand it.
There has to be a way around that.
Yeah, this is just to set the price.
Yes.
Yeah. And through the legislation that Kathy's referring to, then that, there's ways that we can, that becomes the devil's in the details.
Yeah.
That can be taken care of through the legislative process, I think, at the federal level to help with that so that you get this. If you deal with it administratively, it's very constrained for us to do condemnation. We have that authority already. Don't need special legislation. We do it. All I'm saying is, here exactly what you're saying, small footprints, small acres, do we do condemnation of, not very big.
All right. Anybody else before we talk a little bit about next steps on this? All right, just to get something on the table for ongoing conversation here, Jim, you need to understand very clearly that we're a subcommittee. We don't have any authority on anything here, but we can take a recommendation to the full Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee, and they can take those kind of recommendations into the legislative process. But what I'm going to ask you to do is to commit to putting some time and energy into something, given the fact that we can't guarantee any kind of an outcome on it. So.
I have no problem with that. I've done it to date.
Yeah, okay.
And that's, if there's a way to solve this, I'm happy to do that. You've asked my side boards. My side boards are my administrative process. A lot of it's lined out here, and you understand what we've got. That's my only side boards. And then if there's some legislative thing that happens, and then that changes my side board.
The good thing, Mr. Chair, is that the counties and the feds and the state have been working together now.
There's some good track history.
Yeah, we've got some good track history.
You bet.
Yeah, I have no problem. We'll work on it. That's not a problem.
All right. So, once again, just for conversation purposes, at a next meeting, it would be great to look at some tangible proposals. And what I heard outlined here first was one that you've obviously given some thought to in the past, and that's this 100,000 acres in the two locations at Gabatogama and over Pigeon River, right?
Yeah, I would start with as examples, but I would also come to within the administrative. Those are two areas that are outside the administrative boundary of the Superior that were established back in the 30s for consolidation when no one wanted that land. So we had authority to acquire outside our administrative boundary, but then I would also look at other scattered ownerships. I use Cascade State Park. We have others.
So I'm thinking about one concept that would capture, you know, more or less 100,000 acres divided up the way you want it, and then best professional judgment on a portion of this that would be direct acquisition to take care of the trust fund lands within the boundary waters. I was also intrigued by your proposal that we make this about a bigger issue of consolidation of ownerships and make the boundary waters just a small tangential piece of it. That would be an interesting proposal to see framed up in more detail, to see that how that might walk and talk, what the actual acreages would look like. And we ought to also explore the county ownership piece of that, because there's no reason we couldn't have a third party in that mix. And then I'm wondering about one that trends us toward where John is heading here, and that's trying to take more advantage of the direct revenue flow from a larger sale with a smaller exchange. And so we'd have kind of three.
Yeah, or maybe it's a larger revenue flow because we're buying the boundary waters, but we still do just as big an exchange. We still target, if the right number's 100,000, I mean, we can probably get to that number with this larger scope of looking at school trust fund in northeastern Minnesota and accomplish 85-90% of our goal of consolidation and better management, and trying to start getting more like $5 or $10 an acre on average rather than 2 or 3.
Sure.
That would make Denise happy.
About three or four years.
Maybe we still can get 80 or 90 or 100 million bucks in cash, which would make everybody happy.
Well.
About 3 or 4 years ago, Dave Epperly and I were having discussions. He is the division director of forestry, having discussions about consolidation. And we're exchanging maps back and forth for those lands. Dave, I'm sure you're aware of that. For lands, we didn't talk about the boundary waters. We left that out of it. We started looking at what would make sense for consolidation. So we have the bare bones or the pencil version of that kind of a map. If you ignore the school trust lands in the wilderness, if you stay at the 30,000 foot level, we have some concepts or things, pencils on map anyway, lines drawn on map that show some of that. And then the other was, well, how do you deal with the school trust? Well, maybe that is who you do through land water conservation fund purchase, but you deal with the consolidation. And so we drag up some old maps that can show, they're about 3 years old, that kind of got stopped for a while there. But anyway, we started that discussion of consolidation outside the wilderness.
Perfect.
So we have some of that in place, and what you've done then is just encouraging you to separate some of those issues. That's why I suggested the 30,000 and deal with consolidation, Senator, like you're talking about. Well, you still know how the best way to solve boundary waters, school trust lands, maybe through a purchase, but then you're still dealing with the consolidation to help all owners.
Well, talk to me here. I'm looking at trying to get a kind of a menu laid out that we can look at more specifically, and particularly to take to your colleagues and say, you know, here's kind of a range of opportunities.
Well, Mr. Chase, is this something that, I mean, nobody's laughing me out of here on this. Do you think this is something we can do?
Yeah, I was going to ask Jim if that's helpful to him, and it occurred to me you probably don't care. This is about state authority.
It's about state, yeah.
And anything to streamline how the agency can deal with these lands has to be a helpful piece, I would think.
But here's what I'd say, Tom. If you just do the exchange and you sort of put in a bill that says, hey, the whole way to solve this problem is exchange, then it doesn't have the feeling of a compromise, and it doesn't have the feeling of... And I understand what the range delegation did. I mean, there's a whole other constituency group out there that if they could buy into this too, so that the environmental and Friends of the Boundary Waters community was saying, yeah, this is a sensible overall solution. Everybody comes out of this with something that works. And let's go down and tell Amy Klobuchar and Betty McCollum that it's a great deal, just as much as we're saying to Jim Oberstar it's a great deal.
But subdivision 3 here, you know, does say riparian lands may be exchanged for non-riparian lands, right, which basically is doing what you're saying. You're basically saying that they don't have to be the same value.
Yeah, John, I just want to be clear. I heard Greg say this is non-exclusive to exchange. This would leave the door open to a combination of exchange and sales.
No, I get that.
Okay, okay.
But wouldn't we, if we really had sort of a consensus going, wouldn't we want to tell the commissioner that he ought to aggressively pursue a combination of exchange and purchase? Where he would be seeking to maximize the exchanges of all school trust fund land within some quadrant of the state to accomplish maximum economic benefits of consolidation, and also seeking to obtain congressional consent for a sale and purchase of a reasonable portion of the property that's not suitable or can't be rationally exchanged in order to try to generate, pick a number, I mean, $90 million, $100 million for the school trust fund at the same time. Because then we could maybe, instead of it being a huge fight between a bunch of metro people saying, well, that's a bad outcome, although Tom will win that fight.
Oh, come on now.
With a bunch of lobbying by the Boundary Waters community against it, we might have everybody linking arms and saying, wow, this is a great solution.
I think that's right.
I mean, we get more money for schools. We get much better managed forest area. All the school trust fund becomes economically productive on its own right.
Guaranteed production of wilderness protection, wilderness values.
Protect wilderness values. Now, I still like the idea of thinking out loud about whether we could have a recreational surcharge for the state land that's in there and just make our money that way. But.
Yeah, and we haven't taken any of that conversation off the table by pursuing this one. Your point?
I think the chairman was going down this path for a while, is that I think we need an array of options, but I think we need a cost analysis of them. And we're not technical, not to the dollars, not to the cents, but let's just say it's, it would go in the hundred millions, and say, okay, what does that mean to the, what if we took plan A, which would be sell the whole thing, that would be X amount to the school trust fund, and what would that generate in interest for the next, let's go out 10 years. We take plan B, a compromise, some sales, some exchange that we know basically, we've got history. The DNR has been great about documenting what they do. We know what that would do in forestry land. We know what that would do in the school trust land fund. And then C would be some level of fees or something like that. And I don't know what the other options are, but I'm not, I am open to all plans. As I said earlier, it will come down to the cost analysis for the benefit of the schools. And so I think that it is time to start looking at that. And we can do it quickly. I mean, we even do it on our little papers, I think it would be nice to be able to now compare plans from a cost effectiveness.
And then I would add to make certain we have pros and cons for each one besides the cost benefit analysis, because this is a heart and mind issue.
But we need some of these costs, down all in the right column, like the EIN costs, $2 million. That's, that might affect
significant.
Look at it, yeah.
I don't hear anybody disagreeing with that, at least as a next step, so we get something more tangible on the table to talk about. Is that a fair statement? DNR, you on board working with the Forest Service on this?
Sure.
Let's see. When do we have another meeting scheduled? Talk to me about time frame on this.
Do we have it seems like we had one.
We have December 10th for the full committee.
We do. We didn't set a subcommittee.
Are we going to go back in this year? Is it February?
Yes. Pardon me?
Is it February?
Yep.
Early February. So we could also do some work after the first of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And still have a recommendation to the legislature.
And I don't think we'll get a chance to meet with the range delegation probably till they're in session, right?
No, but I can deal with the range delegation.
One of the subcommittees, maybe.
And I don't mean that as a flippant, but I mean, no, we're better off sitting down and just arguing this a little bit amongst ourselves rather than getting anybody in.
Just let me get a little feedback here from Forest Service and DNR on what you think a reasonable time frame is to assemble kind of those three concepts.
I think it depends on how detailed you're trying to be versus the, the $35,000 level picture. Getting into the details would be a really big task for saying we want to consolidate here.
Well, I don't think you ought to try and solve all the detailed questions until we lead you to a.
That's not from Senator Dietrich. Is a lot of zeros to the left.
So butcher block.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you could say, we'll do an acre for acre exchange of the 89,000 acres of state and school trust and equalized value through payment. And that would be done through Land Water Conservation Fund or something. I'm not sure that would be, that's one option. The other is to stay higher yet and talk about this land exchange and then the purchase of that 89,000 acres of school trust lands. And that's another option. And you have different flow of dollars and costs associated with that. And then, so those can come together fairly quickly.
Or maybe Kathy and the other DNR folks know, how many acres of school trust fund land are within the Superior National Forest outside of the Boundary Waters?
Don't know that off the top of the head.
Because you've got, if this is right, we have 585,000 acres of total state land inside the the Superior.
Right.
So we got loads of land to exchange. I mean, we could exchange hundreds of thousands of acres if we wanted to.
You probably have.
And it made sense.
I would say probably easily another 100,000 acres of school trust lands. Of that 585, you can take off 85,000 and say that's okay, that's the wilderness school trust.
Right.
Right.
And then in that state land, then you're going to deal with this. You better, you know, there's about 20,000 state acquired university trust. That's part of that number too. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's easily 100 to 150,000 acres of other school trust lands inside that 3.2 million acre boundary of the Superior National Forest. So you may have, of that 585, there may be a couple hundred thousand, say 200,000 acres. That's an uneducated guesstimate of school trust land. Every township, it's 16 and 36 of every township.
Yes. Well, I have to say, frankly, I'm kind of blown away by the idea that an EIS would cost $2 million. Because there's actually no change in the use of the property. I'm thinking more that most of these costs, a couple million dollars, are the real costs of actually assessing the property acre by acre or parcel by parcel, deciding what their value is, and some of those kinds of things. I mean, you can't spend, I don't know, I mean, it seems like a lot of money to spend on an impact statement. They need a better advisor on how to do these more economically. But I do think a lot of the work...
That's based on experience.
Those are highly controversial.
I think impact statements have become blocking mechanisms.
Yeah. I propose we did an EIS for treating 60-some thousand acres of land that had been blown down into wilderness through prescribed fire. We did an EIS of that, and there was a lot of consensus around that. Friends of the Boundary Waters and others accepted that. Becky Ron and I spent a lot of time talking about that, and that still cost $1.5 million to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a fair amount of consensus.
It's crazy.
And it's there. And so, a land exchange where you're going from federal to state ownership, or from state ownership to federal ownership in the wilderness, and then you're dealing with the lands outside. That's where I would easily double that figure.
Yeah. Well, maybe what I'm saying is not.
I wish it would.
No. Cheaper. I think what I'm saying is just different. I mean, if you spend $1.5 million to look at an EIS on prescribed burning, at the same time you were creating all the plans for how you'd really do it, understanding your logistics, understanding your risk trade-offs.
We didn't go that low in detail.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe if we had some consensus, we could.
But Mr. Chair, if
it's what.
If you go to 30,000 feet, I mean, we're assuming that there's that at some point EIS is going to be cheaper for a number of acres. So
yeah.
if we do go to the big picture, possibly we can do this and save some money.
If we did a land exchange EIS for outside the wilderness and take that wilderness factor out of that land exchange, it will still be controversial. And it'll still be in the $1 million range,
right.
But it won't be at the $3 million range. I think you could work to keep it under $3 million if you don't have the Boundary Waters part of that land exchange. If you add the Boundary Waters to that land exchange, you raise the level of significance or the issues and that you're dealing with much higher.
These are once-in-a-lifetime things, too. I mean, these are like the conservation easement on Blandon land. It's something that never is going to have to be done again.
Yeah, you're right. So, you know, this would be a huge step forward in rational management of the property, both of the state and the Superior.
Yeah.
And with the counties rolled in, too, why not?
Okay, I want to come back to when we might be able to get back together on this. We have a full Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee meeting scheduled at 11 o'clock on the 10th of December. I need to hear whether you think that's doable for the two agencies to have something available for us. I would probably suggest an 8:30 meeting of this group to get it in advance of the full committee, and I think this will be a two-hour conversation.
Well, it's a bad day for me because I'm in Washington that day.
Okay.
You know, at meeting with Congressman Obie on something else. So.
Okay.
Should we go on the 9th? And
I'm not available.
I go out on the 8th and I come back at the end of the day on the 10th. So.
I think at a high level, with Kathy and we can work with something, Dave, here, fairly, you know, using your philosophy of, you know, a lot of zeros to the left with the decimal point, very high level, we could be done in early December. That week in December, I'm out of pocket the entire week.
So what about the week of the 1st of December, the 30th of November? What if we met a week early, Patty? That means pulling you in here twice in 2 weeks. How about, say, the 2nd or 3rd? 1 o'clock in the afternoon on the 2nd?
Okay. I love afternoons.
Going once?
You got to give us time to open up the calendar. Most of us don't have those more efficient ones. Not a terrible thing.
I'm not going to buy another one of these. I'm going to use my, but I got to learn how to run it first.
No problem.
I don't have the confidence to.
1 o'clock.
Yeah.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock on the 2nd, John.
No kidding. It takes longer than it should to do this.
Room
125? Oh, it'll just depend on what's available. Chelsea will fix us up. Yep, December 2nd.
Yeah, it's good. I'm over here anyway. I'll just cut out of the LCCMR meeting and come over for this.
And I was going to get back to everybody about when we were having our before session caucus, in case we wanted a lot of Rangers down here.
Okay.
That they might be here around that date, and that was what the beeping was for, and I apologize for that. December 15th. So if that adds into our mix at all, if we want to start the discussion with, and I would guess a lot of people would come down for that.
Okay. December 15th.
Yes.
At what time?
I think it's all day.
All day. What's the official name of the discussion?
It would be just our pre-session house caucus.
Oh, okay.
Is it all day?
Yes. Normally it is.
So you'd do it the day before or something like that?
Right. Or the morning after.
Or maybe it'd be better to do the...
Save it all till then?
Yeah.
Have 2 meetings in 1 day?
Well, the only downside is that we miss the opportunity to report to the full school fund advisory committee on where we're at on this.
If we do come to a conclusion, I think we ought to report to that committee.
That would be the downside.
You would want me at that meeting?
We'd appreciate it.
December 2nd, 1 o'clock.
And I'm not inclined to spend any time generating agenda items for the next meeting because I think we got our agenda.
Yeah.
And we got a couple we're dangling here, Kathy. I'm not inclined to jump into anything new with 7 minutes left on the clock. So.
And may I just add, when we start looking at the different array of options, I think that we have to now start including the school trust fund in that and what it would add to the school trust fund. And what that means per pupil, all that's very easy to figure out. We have a history of it. And just kind of out to the next, 10 years, what that would mean, on a per pupil basis.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the order?
Maybe Kathy could send us out some of this information on the revenues that they've put together for what they were going to do here. Revenue and expenses.
Sure. Did we go through that? Did we miss that?
We didn't do that.
Okay. We didn't do that. She was ready to do it, but I preempted her with this other thing. So.
I want to lobby for one of those color copies.
Take this one. Here, she can have mine.
Oh, wait, no, he's got a couple extra. They can go print them off, right? Thank you.
Jim, my profound thanks for you being willing to come down here and talk to us today. Thank you very much.
You are very good at what you do.
Good conversation, everybody. I think we stand adjourned. Drive careful driving home in the rain.
Yes.
A lot of close games.
I know. Isn't it a drag?
I've been watching,
We lost last night.
That got mentioned before you were in the room.
We're a little depressed today.
That's not the state